Our fourth case for this morning is United States against Love and United States against Brown. So, Ms. Christensen.
May it please the court, counsel. Good morning, Your Honors. I won't take up much of your time this morning. The government and I are in agreement that these two issues need to be remanded to the district court. Of course, the number of victims and the restitution order and the judgment. So unless the court has questions about those issues or the concession of error, I think it's pretty plain that the errors have been made and need to be remanded to the district court. I'll cede the rest of my time to my co-counsel.
So you're not often here, Ms. Christensen, in this circumstance for yourself.
No, and we're not going to look a gift horse in the mouth, as the saying goes. So
it gives you a warm feeling about the government, doesn't it?
It does, Your Honor. I have a very warm feeling. Any questions?
All right, I have no questions, so we will allow you to cede your time to Mr. Nagelberg.
Thank you very much.
Good morning. I'm Sheldon Nagelberg on behalf of Defendant Appellant Bobby Brown. The Chicago scheme, and I'm referring to government's exhibits A and B, which are in the appendix of my brief and in government's brief also. Of those 102 properties in the Chicago scheme, only 12 are applicable to the methodology used by the government through their case agent, Agent Kaiser. And the reason for that is only 12 of those 102 properties is where the lender, the original lender, is also the same lender at foreclosure.
But what evidence was presented at the sentencing stage of this? I thought that Brown did not show the evidence that there was any specific reason not to accept the government agent's methodology, like parcel by parcel, I mean. It's a rational enough thing. I mean, if there's loss somewhere along the chain, somebody bears it. Maybe
yes.
Not the original lender, but someone.
Your Honor, frankly, of course, I was not trial counsel. I believe
it's business, Mr. Nagelberg, not personal. So
it's
we
not
will.
Personal, but I believe
you
that
can help us in this.
I believe that trial counsel. Well, if I may, I'm just holding up this. The key
what
in my argument.
What page of the appendix is this? 22. Where are you?
Yes, I'm looking at 22, which is the first page.
Right.
And this column, which is marked assignee lien holder at foreclosure, is the key. And that column is present in all 7 pages of Exhibit A, which is Chicago scheme, and all 4 pages of Exhibit B, which is the Las Vegas scheme. And in that lies the intrigue and the error. And the error is that of the and none of the 32 properties in the Las Vegas scheme was where the original lender ended up being the individual at foreclosure. And the problem is that the methodology used by Agent Kaiser was a very simplistic one. It simply said, let's take the value of the loan and simply subtract, in order to find loss, the end result when it's sold to the purchaser at a judicial sale.
But, it is simple, but, again, we know in this market people will sell paper, will sell loans to somebody else. But these sales, especially if it's a troubled property, tend to be at a pretty steep discount. And I see no reason why taking the original loan amount and what dollars finally come out of it, although it may not show that that loss fell exclusively on the original lender, why isn't that a pretty good measure of the loss? It doesn't have to be down to the penny, by the way, for the sentencing guidelines.
Absolutely, and I admit it. I'm not seeking perfection here, but the properties that I'm talking about these sales were pre-foreclosure. In other words, before there was even, and in many, even before there was notice of list pendants and notice of foreclosure, there were these sales, there were assignments, there were trusts, there were these packages. Some of these, I guess, could be called these toxic loans. And so this all occurred pre-foreclosure. If it was post-foreclosure, that would be different. So even before,
why is foreclosure so magic, though? If somebody has a loan for, you know, $150,000, and the house is sold for $100,000, then they're not going to recover the full amount of the loan.
Well, and the problem
even if
is
there's been no foreclosure, even if it's just a short sale.
Yes, but that all occurred post foreclosure. The key here is we're looking for reliability as to loss and who took risk of loss. If, for example, one of the chronic pre-foreclosure sellers was a company called Long Beach Mortgage. Every one of Long Beach Mortgage and every one of Countrywide, before there was foreclosure, they would sell it in these packages. There were trust assignments. And so the question is, number one, was Long Beach the victim, or was the so-called victim the assignee or the trustee or the collective package that was sold prior to any indication that there was going to be a foreclosure? Who is the victim, and how do we measure loss? In the United States versus James in the Tenth Circuit, they discussed this very point.
And what if the loss is spread out over a series of people? I guess what you're saying is if the original lender manages to unload this property, or whatever word you want to use,
yes,
then they don't suffer any loss.
That's correct.
But somebody else did. If they unload it for full value, it's just B in the chain instead of A who suffers the loss.
And you're hitting the right point. The problem is before the district court, point B was never gotten into.
Why does it matter, though, if at the end of the day, through the chain, some people are up and some people are down, but we can see that it nets out at a loss? Why doesn't that just tell us that there was a loss?
Oh, yes, there was a loss, but the question is the reliability. What is the loss? I mean, it's a gigantic amount of money. Mr. Brown
was a big actor.
Mr. Brown was
a lot of money.
The court, you know, found that Mr. Brown was in a lot of trouble, $32 million. And yet, of those 12 transactions, which I believe were accurately estimated, that totaled to less than $1 million. And if we can go into some kind of introspection and analysis of that central column on the pages of the exhibits, we could get a more accurate estimation of loss.
Okay. You are in your rebuttal time, which is up to you, but if you'd like to save a minute or two.
Yes, I'd like to save. Thank you.
Mr. May?
May it please the court, my name is Daniel May. I'm an assistant United States attorney and representing the United States on this appeal. I would first of all like to address the Love appeal. The government, in its brief, did indicate that there was a procedural error by Judge Anderson as to the number of victims that were found by Judge Anderson, and the record is unclear as to whether or not Judge Anderson would have made a different sentence in the light of the procedural error. So we would ask for a remand of the sentence and that remand of the case for resentencing before the assigned judge. As to the Brown case, Your Honors, the district court, Judge Kendall, over a period of time, and I'm speaking months, had advised the defendant that it was going to use a certain methodology. And that was a methodology that had been approved by this court on numerous occasions and has been recently affirmed in the United States versus Green from August of last year. That methodology is to take the original loan amount and then subtract the collateral gained upon the sale of the property. That is the loss amount. The agent that testified at the sentencing hearing presented two summary charts, and the judge
Kaiser?
Yes, Agent Kaiser. Agent Kaiser presented that testimony to Judge Kendall and went through those two summary charts, finding that there were two schemes, 134 total properties. In each of the 134 properties, there was actual loan proceeds issued by the lender at the time of the closing. The agent then testified that in preparation of the summary charge, he reviewed business records and public records and determined the amount of collateral received upon the sale of the property after foreclosure.
Now, he made this assumption, did he not, that the principal amounts of these loans had not been reduced over the time that somebody was holding the property?
Correct, Judge. And he did that with the assumption also that he did not subtract out or back out interest costs or costs incurred by the foreclosing entity, but didn't also back out any of the initial payments. These were early default payments by this whole scheme. And the evidence before the judge...
These tend to be 30-year mortgages. What kind of mortgages were they?
There were usually 100% mortgages over a 30-year period of time, Judge. And most of these properties went into early default almost immediately after one or two payments. And the judge found that the $32 million was conservative. Mr. Brown was the leader and the organizer. The judge found that based upon the evidence in Mr. Brown's own statements that every one of these 134 loans was fraudulent. He knew that they were going to go into default early on. He actually moved his scheme from Chicago out to Las Vegas to help initiate and accelerate the scheme to cover the costs that he was having in paying the nominee owners and other people that were involved in the scheme. The judge found that this $32 million was actually conservative and actually pointed out during the sentencing argument that the loss could almost be $80 million, which was the total amount of loan proceeds issued by these 40 to 50 lenders during the course of the scheme.
When you say 100%, that means no down payment?
No down payments.
And I guess the obvious follow-up is, why were they making those kinds of loans?
Judge, that was the lenders at that time in 2004, 2005, 2006, making these subprime loans. They were making these loans based upon no documentation loans. They were making for 100%. Mr. Brown organized.
Was there some mandate or something? Why would an institution do that?
That was just the policy of the lenders, Your Honor.
Really?
That they would do that, yes.
That's why Countrywide wound up in such hot, not just them, but...
They were one of the lenders in this particular case, along with many other lenders.
But the $84 million is crazy, because the lenders did get money back
when
these properties were sold. That's an overstatement, I think.
But I think that the point was clear that at time that the defendants were aware of this methodology, they had access to all the records, all of the public records, and they had a retained expert that was allowed to challenge the government's findings. And not once during the closing argument or during the cross-examination did the defendant put on any evidence to show that these two charts were unreliable, and the court admitted the two charts as a summary of the losses based upon the testimony. And we believe that there's nothing in the record to show that the $32 million could ever be reduced to the next lower level of the guidelines, which was $20 million. There's nothing in the record to show that there's a $20 million difference between what the government showed as the $32 million and the next lowest guideline range.
What was the next lowest range?
It would be $7 million to $20 million would be the next one.
It would have to be more than $12 million to get
correct,
it, to
Judge.
Pull it below that.
Correct.
Okay.
In addition to that, the court heard the reliability of this testimony based upon the hundreds of interviews that were done, the review of all of the documents, Mr. Brown's own statements, and I think that the court found under Rule 1006, which it didn't have to do, but did find under that, that these were admissible, accurate summaries of the scheme that Mr. Brown was involved in.
So I can't figure out what all these interviews were for if it was just this simple mechanical task for Agent Kaiser to, you know, take the original loan amount, see what was reaped at the end of the day, and subtract.
Well, I think, Judge, part of that was the interviews were interviews of bank officers, lender officers, nominees, other people that were involved in the scheme, along with the process of reviewing all the title company records, the lender records, and the public document records. And it was a totality of all of that that he came up with these two summary charts. And we presented this evidence to the judge to show the reliability of the two summary charts.
Well, does that evidence show that all along this chain until foreclosure, everybody was duped?
Yes, Judge. And I think that one point that counsel made was that these are records and these numbers that were found by Agent Kaiser during this process were the amount of collateral received after foreclosure. Many of these companies...
So is it your position that it matters who that went to? In other words, that there were intermediate transactions, as there may well have been? What Mr. Nagelberg was describing was happening all over the market, you know, packaging up these things into...
Well, there was no evidence of that in this particular case, Judge. And I think the agent testified that at the sentencing hearing that there was no sale post-default of these loans, that this was a figure, it was undisputed, and the defendant presented no other evidence to the contrary, that these were the collateral amounts received post-foreclosure, and that the trial court did what this court has established on numerous occasions as to the proper methodology here. You take the original loan amount and subtract the collateral received after the foreclosure sale. This court has looked at other things and other arguments that have been brought up and really dismissed this. Remember, Judge, that this is a reasonable estimate. And what the defendant has to do is show that the calculations made by the government were beyond the permissible bounds or realm of possibility here. And there was nothing in that. There were really conclusionary assertions by the defendant at sentencing. And for that reason, we would ask that the court affirm the methodology and the calculation and the loss amount and affirm the sentence of the defendant.
Is there a restitution order in any kind?
Yes, Judge, there is.
And how much is that?
I believe 32, that the court 30. Found the restitution in the amount of $32 million.
And how would that be? Obviously, you know, it's maybe hypothetical, but how would that be paid back?
Judge, that was paid based upon the calculation, and I...
Who would get it?
It would go to the particular...
Intermediate.
It would go to the particular entity that was, say, in the case of Long Island or Long Beach lending. They're now owned by a different entity. It actually went to the entity that now owns that particular...
Theoretically, the original lender didn't lose anything.
Well, Judge, that's not... That may not be true.
And
that they were absorbed. A lot of these were subprime lenders that were absorbed by their parent corporations after they went under. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. Anything further, Mr. Nagelberg?
First of all, with regards to a comment that Judge Mannion made, the culture of the times in 2005, 2006, 2007 was many purchasers didn't have to put anything down. In fact, there were instances where purchasers were lured. Not only did they not have to put money down, they were offered at closing funds.
Toasters and things like that.
Yes. That's correct.
What
we're all suffering from today in this mortgage crisis is in part related to that.
Well, everybody assuming the value is going to go up. Is it
that's right.
Why they
yes.
would make that kind of a
yes.
loan?
Yes.
Throw to the sky.
And the pre-foreclosure packaging that I'm referring to and the assignments were crucial in determining the reliability. I'm just asking that there be a reliable estimate. And frankly, I don't think the trial counsel really went into what should have been gone into. But I don't think that can constitute a waiver because the burden was still upon the government to establish in these charts and in the testimony of Agent Kaiser, who was a foundation witness. He was not an expert witness, and he simply laid a foundation. But there's much more involved in determining accurate loss, a reasonable loss. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The court will take the cases under advisement.